We started a series last week. It's kind of a unique series, and it's called Out of the Darkness. And the truth of the matter is, really, I'm dealing with things that have been challenges for us. Last week, I talked about loss. How do we deal with loss in our life whenever we've lost somebody? You know, things that kind of cause us to withdraw and pull away. And so we looked at loss last week. Today, I want to talk to you about moving past betrayal. In other words, somebody that you love, somebody that loved you, and there was something that they did that created a huge wound in your life. And now you're trying to get on the other side of it. And how do we do that? You know, David wrote this psalm in Psalm 55, verse 12 through 14. He was dealing with loss. His son had turned against him. Absalom had turned against him. And then one of his closest counselors, I believe his name was Ahithophel, had turned against him and went to be with David's son to help organize this revolt. And so David said this. He goes, "It's not an enemy who taunts me. I could bear that. It's not my foes who so arrogantly insult me. I could have hidden from them. Instead, it's you, my equal, my companion, and close friend. What good fellowship we once enjoyed as we walked together to the house of God." In other words, he was sharing, man, the pain is so great because we were friends at one time. We did church together. And so he'd experienced that incredible pain. And so how do we do that? Whenever we've been hurt or wounded, it's not always a church hurt. Sometimes it's a marriage hurt. Sometimes it's a parental hurt or a child hurt, or it's a, you know, a sibling hurt or coworker hurt, or just, you know, neighborhood. I mean, just something takes place in our life where there's somebody that we've trusted, that, you know, that our hearts have poured themselves out to. And because of what's taken place, we walk around with this wound that's just incredibly painful. How do we deal with that? What do we do? I mean, are we forced to live with it for the rest of our life? Is it one of those things that we're forced to just, well, that's just forever beyond me? Or does God have something better for us? We're going to look at the life today of a guy named Joseph who was hurt by his brothers. I mean, in an incredible way. It was just one of those things that what he experienced was horrific. And so if you would open up your Bibles to Genesis 37. If you're still learning your way around the Bible, there's an Old Testament and a New Testament. And Genesis is in the Old Testament. It's the very first book of the Bible. So Genesis 37, I want to read this to you from something that happened with Joseph. And he shared this with his brothers. So turn to Genesis 37. Let's start with verse 18. But let me find it here in my scripture. Genesis, I want to share with you from Genesis 37, verse 1. It says this: "So Jacob settled again in the land of Canaan, where his father had lived as a foreigner. This is the account of Jacob and his family. When Joseph was 17 years old, he often tended his father's flocks. He worked for his half-brothers, the sons of his father's wives, Bilhah and Zilpah." And so it talks about how Joseph loved his son, and Jacob loved his son Joseph. And it said, "One night Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers about it, they hated him more than ever." So his brothers already hated him because they felt like he was his dad's favorite. But then he had a dream, and he told his brothers this dream, and they hated him even more. You're like, what kind of dream could he have that would cause his brothers to hate him? Well, understand this. He was one of the younger of all the sons. And he went and told his brothers. He said, "Look, man, I had this dream last night, and you guys were all bowing before me, serving me." How many of you in here have a younger sibling? Let me see your hand. How would you feel if they came to you and said, "I got great news. You're going to be bowing before me one of these days"? And so, and you probably look at him and go, "Hey, look, man, you're the baby of the family. We all already do that anyway. What's new, you know?" But the truth of the matter is that just that thought of, you know, that you're going to come. So they hated him for that. Like, "We're not bowing before you." Well, then he had another dream, and he went and told his parents about it because they were in it too. And even his dad goes, "I don't know what you're thinking, but that's not happening." So that, you know, the brothers, and you know, and they said, "He's already dad's favorite. Now he's telling us about dreams. We're going to be working for him. Somebody's got to do something about him." Well, you know, we could, like, you know, not give him seconds. We could, you know, just kind of ignore him or whatever. And one of the brothers goes, "Let's kill him." And they go, "Okay." And so they went right to it, but they ended up not doing that. So we're going to pick up there in Genesis 37. We'll start with verse 18. It said, "When Joseph's brothers saw Joseph coming, they recognized him in the distance. As he approached, they made plans to kill him. 'Here comes the dreamer,' they said. 'Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns. We can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams.'" So as he's coming forward there, you know, they said, "Hey, let's kill him. Here comes," they referred to him as the dreamer. Well, you could see where the pain came in their life in regards to him. And the truth of the matter is, once he got there, one of the brothers said, let's not kill him, lest his blood be upon our hands. Let's sell him. And so this group of Ishmaelite traders were coming along, and they sold their brother to him, and they took him into Egypt, where they sold him to Potiphar. But then the brothers went back home and told their dad, hey, Joseph's been eaten by a wild animal. We're sorry, Dad, you'll never see him again. Well, his dad was heartbroken. And so in this, it began, or we see that action taking place right now. But I want you to see that their decision really came not because Joseph had done anything. It was because of their own insecurities. And this is what we have to know, is that whenever somebody betrays us, people betray us from a place of their brokenness, from a place of their insecurities. Isn't it often what happens that whenever, you know, somebody that we thought loved us, or somebody that was supposed to, somebody was supposed to be there for us, and they weren't, that whenever they're not there for us and they hurt us, that often the devil will come along and tell us, well, it's just because there's something wrong with you. If you were better, they'd still be here. If you were more lovable, they would still be here. If you were doing the right things, if, you know, if you weren't such a mess, they would still be here. And he tries to convince each person that the reason why that person abandoned you is because you're so broken. But the truth of the matter is that's not what happens in brokenness. Often people abandon us not because we're broken, but they abandon us from a place of their own brokenness. And so right here with Joseph, you know, he could have thought, well, if I was just a better brother, you know, if I just use more discretion, and again, he had those dreams as a kid, and that's one of the things you learn in childhood is what discretion is. I remember that, you know, that one time we had a neighbor come over and talk to us. We live in New Mexico, and she said, hey, you know, I know you guys are Christians and that type of thing, but, and, you know, we love having you guys as neighbors, and your kids are friends with my daughter, but your son came over the other day and asked her if she wanted to get saved, and when she didn't know how to respond, he said, well, I think you're going to go to hell then. And so she said, if you could tell your son not to have those kind of evangelistic opportunities with my daughter, I would really appreciate it. And I'm like, well, you know, he tells me the same thing, but that's really not true right there. But anyway, that's really not true. But the first part was true with the mom, you know, he just told her that. And so he told the daughter that. And so, you know, a lot of times as kids, our kids are trying to learn what those boundaries are and what's appropriate and what's proper and all that kind of stuff. And so, but that wasn't an issue of Joseph's heart. It was just where he was. But his brothers clearly had a place of incredible insecurity, where they wanted to distance themselves as far as they could away from him and to make sure he was no longer a part of their life. And sometimes the reason why it's hard to get over the pain of betrayal is because we continue looking for that place in us that's broken. If I was just better, if I just wasn't so broken, they'd still be here. If I was just a better kid, you know, my parent would have loved me better. If I was just a better spouse, my spouse would have loved me better. And each one of those things, it's just that focus of how messed up we are and what's wrong. And the truth of the matter is all of us, for all of our lives, we'll have areas that none of us leave this place perfect. That as long as we're in this fleshly body, that there's still a work that God has to do in all of us. All of us, myself included, man, more so me than anybody. And so just to have that understanding and that awareness of what takes place. But I want to say to those of you that may be in here today that you're dealing with that brokenness, that the truth of the matter is maybe one of the reasons why it's had such a foothold in your life, because you've thought all along, if I was just better, if I was just better, that they wouldn't have done this to me. Well, it's not your brokenness that caused this. It was theirs. Any relationship that we're in, whoever we're with, all of us, they have areas they need to grow in, and we have areas that we need to grow in. And so in order to get on the other side of that, we have to have an awareness of that God's always doing a work on us. So they sold their brother into slavery, and they sold him to a guy named Potiphar. Potiphar was a well-positioned guy in Egypt. He was very close to Pharaoh in leadership. So he's a very powerful man. And Joseph began to work for him. And Joseph worked so well, and the Lord was with Joseph and helped him. And matter of fact, he did so good that eventually Potiphar said, you're in charge of everything that I own. Well, Potiphar's wife had a lust problem, and she kept pursuing Joseph and kept wanting him to behave inappropriately with her, to have an affair with her. And he kept saying no. We're going to pick up on one of those moments on Genesis 39, verse 3, that, you know, the Lord was with Joseph. It says Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph, even in this horrible place he was with him, giving him success in everything he did. This pleased Potiphar, so he soon made Joseph his personal attendant. He put him in charge of his entire household and everything he owned. From the day Joseph was put in charge of his master's household and property, the Lord began to bless Potiphar's household for Joseph's sake. All his household affairs ran smoothly, and his crops and livestock flourished. So Potiphar gave Joseph complete administrative responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph there, he didn't worry about a thing except what kind of food to eat. Joseph was a very handsome and well-built young man, and Potiphar's wife soon began to look at him lustfully. "Come and sleep with me," she demanded. But Joseph refused. "Look," he told her, "my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. He has held back nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing? It would be a great sin against God." You know, sometimes, man, whenever we've been hurt by people and we feel like it's cost us, I mean, you think about what took place with Joseph right here. He lost years with his father. He lost years with his father, with his family. His dad thought he was dead, so his dad's not looking for him. And he's in a place where he's a servant. He has no political or social or economic or military power whatsoever. And so it would be real easy in this moment to be angry and bitter, to be mad. And often when we're put in this situation, and we see how our life has been disrupted and how it just seems so unfair what's taken place in us, that often not only do we get mad at the person that's done us, but even sometimes, man, we get mad at God. I remember years ago, I was dealing with somebody that was going through a hard situation and they'd really been hurt in a relationship. And in that, they were angry, at not just the person that done it, they were angry at the Lord. And I remember they told me one day they were praying and they said they had a God thought and they really believed that God gave them a thought. And he said this in the thought that he goes, "Why are you mad at me? I didn't do that to you. I'm here with you still." I know, you know, our church, we're a church that's a relational church. I like people, I'm relational, and you know, I love the fact that our church is growing. Probably the biggest challenge is I can't connect as personally with everybody as I want. If I could, I would. And as a result, that kind of filters out in our church. We're relational, and it's amazing that, you know, people come to church and then people leave church. It's part of it. And sometimes they come here because they've been sent here. God's assigned them here. There's either something that we need or something that they need. And then after a period of time, he assigns them someplace else and says, you know, "Hey, look, you're needed there and here's why." And so, you know, we've had people that leave the church over the years and they're not bad people or anything like that. But I've been real amazed. If I was keeping track, I'm pretty confident that the number one reason why people leave our church, and I don't think it's unique to us, but this is the one I'm aware of, is because they've been hurt or disappointed in some way. And again, the only challenge is, it's not that their pain isn't real, because it is. It's not even that the offense isn't real, but the truth of the matter is that often that the one behind all of these things is the devil. Ephesians 6 says this, that our real battle is not with flesh and blood, it's not with each other, but it's with the devil. Now, here's the devil, is that he's behind the scenes working, drawing things for us to notice, creating offense, and we seize hold of things that have hurt us, and we hold on to those things. And the devil always puts a face on it, but it's never his face. He may put your husband's face on there, or your wife's face on there, or your kid's face, or your parents' face, a coworker, a pastor. I mean, it's just easy, a church member. And so the truth of the matter is that, you know, for any of us, he can do that and come up and want to make us angry at this person, make us mad at that person. And the reality of it is even though all of us, myself included, have at some point probably been used by the enemy unknowingly. As one guy, as an old Pentecostal preacher used to say, he said, "Say amen if you can and say oh me if you can't." And so it's... But we're not going to do that. But it's true, you know, that all of us sometimes on a bad day or in an area that we're insecure and God's still doing a work in, you know, we can be used by the enemy. But one thing that Joseph did here that's so key and so significant, while he was still a servant to Potiphar, And then this situation here, another time, this lady grabbed hold of Joseph's robe and he jerked away. And she had such a strong grip on him that she tore his robe off and he ran away. And she was so angry that she accused him of rape and he was put in prison for years. Man, wouldn't it be so tempting just to blame God? God, I wish you'd have never given me those dreams. I wish you would have never shown that to me. I would have never said anything to my family. I'd be back home with my dad and my mom and my family. I wouldn't be in this prison falsely accused because I wouldn't do this. Or how about this? That a lot of times when that moment would be like, well, you know, God abandoned me. He put me in this place. I'm going to do that. I'm going to have this inappropriate relationship with this lady. I'm justified in doing that because of all that God's done to me. And because the enemy doesn't put his face on it. But if we're going to get on the other side of betrayal, that you have to understand, even in your pain, we have to stay connected to God. Joseph, while he was a servant to Potiphar, still did this as unto the Lord. He said, look, man, he said, God's entrusted me. Your master, your husband's entrusted me with everything. He said, I can't do this. It'd be a great sin against God. And then even when he was in prison, and he became so faithful in the affairs as a prisoner that the chief, the guy in charge of watching the prison, gave Joseph huge responsibilities. While he was there, two men came up to him that had had dreams. And Joseph interpreted one of the dreams. He said to one of the men, he said, your dream means you're getting out of here. When you get out of here, tell Pharaoh about me. And that guy goes, okay, I will. Well, it happened. And guess what? He forgot about Joseph. With friends like that, who needs a devil? You know what I mean? And so he forgot about Joseph. And so then a couple of years later, Pharaoh has a dream and he doesn't know what it means. He said, I wish I could just find somebody to tell me what this dream means. And the guy goes, you know what? There was a few years ago, this guy helped me out. And I don't know why I forgot about him, but he said, get him. And so the Pharaoh brought Joseph up out of the prison and Joseph interpreted his dream and he was automatically promoted to the second most powerful man in all of Egypt. What an incredible story, what an incredible way to get there. But one of the things that Joseph did while he was in this situation is Joseph kept his relationship with God important to his life. Man, if you've been hurt or disappointed, I get it. By a church, by yourself, by a pastor, if by me, I'm so sorry if it was me. If you've been hurt in any way, I want to encourage you to hang on to your relationship with God. Stay with him. Stay engaged with your relationship with him. Well, Pastor Rick, I can't trust him anymore. Yeah, I know, but they're not God. They're just like you. They're a mess in different areas in their life, just like you, just like me. And so in this, that was one of the things that Joseph did is he kept his relationship. Sometimes when we're hurt, we include God as an offender, when in fact he's not. So what do I do in this? First of all, understand this, that they've abandoned you, not because you're broken, but because they are. But second of all, to know this, that if you're in it right now, keep your relationship with God important in your life. Don't turn your back on him. Don't use his permission to do things you shouldn't do. Keep it strong. Let's look at this last thing. Turn to Genesis 45. Now, eventually, this famine hit the land, and it was a broad-reaching famine, and that's where Pharaoh had the dream. And in the dream, he saw these really large cows that were very healthy, seven of them, and then he saw another seven really thin cows, and they ate up those cows. And the truth of the matter is that what God was showing him is there's going to be 7 years of plenty, so save all you can, and there's going to be 7 years of this far-reaching famine. And so Joseph did that. Well, the famine reached to where Joseph's family was. And so Jacob had heard that you know, there was no more famine in Egypt, or you know, there was food there. So he sent all of his sons to Egypt. Again, Jacob thinking that his son was dead, he sent them to Egypt. And they went to Egypt, and Joseph recognized them, but they didn't recognize him. And so there were several things that went on. He was trying to find out if his brothers had learned from what they'd done, but he was hurt. And so eventually, you know, he'd have to excuse himself and weep, just recognizing his family, probably thinking about the time away from them and just all the pain that would create. Well, eventually he's going to reveal himself. And so in 45 verse 1, it says, Joseph could stand it no longer. There were many people in the room, and he said to his attendants, out, all of you. So he was alone with his brothers when he told them who he was. Then he broke down and wept. He wept so loudly the Egyptians could hear him. And word of it quickly carried to Pharaoh's palace. "I am Joseph," he said to his brothers. "Is my father still alive?" But his brothers were speechless. They were stunned to realize that Joseph was standing there in front of them. "Please come closer," he said to them. So they came closer, and he said again, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into slavery in Egypt. But don't be upset, and don't be angry with yourselves for selling me to this place. It was God who sent me here ahead of you to preserve your lives. This famine that has ravaged the land for 2 years will last 5 more years, and there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God has sent me ahead of you to keep you and your families alive and to preserve many survivors. So it was God who sent me here, not you. And he is the one who made me an advisor to Pharaoh, the manager of his entire produce, and the governor of all Egypt." Here's the third thing. If you'll notice this about Joseph, is that if we're going to go to the other side of betrayal, forgiveness is the key to healing from what's been done to you. Forgiveness on something like this, where it's cost us so much time, it's cost us memories and that kind of thing, it's cost us what we thought we were going to have, it's such a hard thing, right? Because our wound is real, and there's still evidence of what's been done to us. And sometimes forgiveness can feel like that we're saying that what they did to us is okay. But that's not what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is not looking at somebody and saying, "Hey, you hurt me, but you really didn't hurt me." No. Forgiveness is saying, "You really hurt me. And if I didn't forgive you, I'd want to punish you with everything that I have." But forgiveness is saying, "Even though you hurt me, I'm not going to punish you. There's no debt. I'm not trying to get even with you. I'm not trying to make you hurt like you've hurt me." And until we're willing to do that, we stay captured by that. Sometimes people live their lives and they're like, "I can never get aside what happened to me 20 years ago. I've shared with you, you know, my story as a kid growing up that we went to church and that type of thing. And one part of my story that I've shared some is that my dad was heavily involved in church. He served, he wasn't paid staff. He worked at a steel plant during the week, really hard work. And then on Saturday morning, he would get up and go to the church and clean it up for free. He said, "How do you know?" Because he took me with him. And I remember that he would go down there and clean it. And the pastor and he were friends. Well, one day there was some tension that took place between the pastor and some of the leaders in the congregation. And it was a denomination, so they got the pastor removed and sent to another place. My dad was incredibly hurt. He tried to push past it. And the best he knew how, and they hired a new pastor. And that guy was just, he was just different. He was different than the other pastor. And so, you know, at the time when I saw the things that were taking place between that pastor and my dad, you know, as a kid that was 10 and 11 years old, I thought that pastor was, he was the villain and my dad was the victim. But the truth of the matter is, looking back on it, they both could have done differently and handled it better. They just didn't know any better. I remember my dad was impacted by the wound that was creating that relationship. He was never the same when it came to how he served in a church. It was just because he was genuinely hurt, but he didn't, and I didn't know to tell him, and he didn't know how to get on the other side of that. He didn't know to understand that yes, that guy had made some mistakes, but so did he, and that, you know, he was broken in some areas, and that his relationship with God had to stay solid, but at the end of the day, he had to be willing to forgive him. And because he didn't, I'm not saying he walked in unforgiveness, but it was just one of those things that because he didn't forgive him, he stayed back. He was never vulnerable in that setting again. And oh, what it cost him. And so for us to get free from betrayal, we have to be willing to forgive. And forgiveness says, "There's no debt. You don't owe me anything. I'm not trying to punish you. Now, I may not trust you, which means I may limit the access that you have to me, but it's not because I'm trying to punish you. It's just a trust issue. But I want you to have your best life. I want your life to be good." And Joseph, he had to do that. You say, "Pastor, why was it so important to him?" Well, one of his brothers' name was Judah. And Judah, the descendant of Judah was Jesus. Jesus was called the Lion from the tribe of Judah. And if Joseph, in his position of authority, had not forgiven his brothers, he would have felt justified in executing them, in killing them. It would have cut off the line of Jesus. But not only was he responsible for continuing that family, but also continuing that line where our Redeemer would come from. So he had to be willing to forgive. The reason why his forgiveness was so connected to experiencing and recognizing and living out what God had promised him was because not just that would impact him personally, but the impact it would have on Judah and the impact it would have on humanity even to today had he not forgiven him and executed each one of his brothers. Forgiveness is so connected to what God has called us to do. Jesus told a parable one time about a man that didn't forgive, and it said that he was given to the tormentors. And when we don't forgive people, that puts us in a position to be tormented over and over again. And so in our lives, as we forgive, whether they're free or not, we're free. Whether they change or not, we're changed. Whether they recognize it or not, we see it. And so number three is this. If you're going to get on the other side of betrayal, forgiveness is the key to healing from what's been done to you. Joseph even said later on, his father died, and the brother said, oh my gosh, the only reason why he hadn't killed us till this time is because dad was alive. And so now that dad's dead, he's going to kill us. And they said, let's go tell him that one of dad's dying wishes, and it's sad you weren't there to hear it, is that he didn't want you to do anything to us. So they went to him. And he told them, he said, look, I'm not God. I'm not going to punish you. We're good. And he even said this to him. He said, as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass as it is this day to save much people alive. In other words, he said, what you intended for evil, God used for good. And so as we forgive and as we trust God, as we keep our relationship, you know, that we understand this, that if people endeavor to hurt us, they don't have the final say on our destiny. They don't have the final say on the outcome of what takes place in our life. No matter what happens, that if we trust God, that he has the final say, even in those hopeless situations, those situations that we deem ourselves unworthy of whatever it is that God has promised us, that if we continue to trust him, continue to serve him, continue to lean in our relationship with him, that ultimately our lives are not in their hands, it's in his hands. And so it's where he takes us and what he does with us in that. And so number three is forgiveness is a key from healing what's been done to us. I want you to do this. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes for just a minute. I want us to spend just a moment with God. And especially for those of you that you've been carrying around a hurt, maybe for a day, maybe for a week, a month, maybe for decades. I want you to get free from that today. Some of you, your relationship with God has never been the same because of what happened to you. And I want you to begin to turn your heart back towards God. He didn't do this to you. The devil may have tried to put God's face on this, but God's not the one that did this to you. But he is the one that can help you out of it. And maybe because you've been unwilling to forgive, just the weight of this and the pain of this has stuck with you. Let's just spend a moment with God and just let him talk with you about this.